Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Keeping young black men alive and free is the topic of this edition of Radio Curious. Our guest is Dr. Josephine Marshall, who in 1987 co-founded the Omega Boys Club of San Francisco, now called Alive and Free, where he is the executive director. Alive and Free is a community violence protection effort for at-risk inner-city youth and a surrogate family support system for young black men and women based in San Francisco, California, to encourage their academic pursuits and obtain financial help for college. Dr. Joseph Marshall is also the host of Street Soldiers Radio, broadcast every Sunday evening on KMEL 106.1 FM in San Francisco at 8 p.m. In 1994, he received a MacArthur Foundation Genius Award for his skills and accomplishments. Dr. Joseph Marshall and I visited by phone from his office in San Francisco on May 4th, 2015, and began our conversation with his description of Alive and Free.
Well, as an organization I founded 28 years ago now, to do something about the plight of young people, essentially to keep them alive and free, which is why now the name is really Alive and Free. As a teacher and administrator, I work with many young people in the Bay Area, both young men and young women. My dreams for them were that they would certainly progress in life and do well. And I believe that was their dreams for them, but I ended up going to the funerals for my former students who I'd given A's to in math, or, you know, the girls got pregnant, boys ended up in jail, selling drugs, that sort of thing. So I realized that being a good teacher wasn't enough, and I wanted to stay connected with them to help them guide them through the hurdles that they were facing. And that turned out to be this after-school program that we call Alive and Free, and at that time, the Omega Boys Club, now known as Alive and Free, because that's what my goal was for them. Back in 1987, I told them if they stuck with the program when they graduated from high school or got their GED, they could pick the college and I'd find the money, because I believed that education was a way out. They took me up on it, and I had my first college graduate in 1993. And this year I'm celebrating my 200th college graduate.
Dr. Marshall, let's talk about the hurdles that you mentioned.
For my young people, it was the lure, simply put, is the lure of the streets, the lure of a lifestyle that seemed to be a way to survive, seemed to be a way out of the circumstances that they were living in, but were certainly not that. As very deceptive, very insidious, they were being lured into it. Even, quote, you know, kids I never thought would go down that road. And my job was to sort of demystify and point out the insidiousness of what they were thinking of getting into or were into, and to pull them back to the people that they actually were. I mean, they thought that getting into this street lifestyle was a way to survive, and it was really a way to die and go to prison. So.
Well, let's talk about the circumstances they lived in to an ill-fated end.
A lot of these kids grew up in, I guess you would call, you know, single-parent homes, fathers in jail, mothers on drugs, seeing people who were selling drugs with material goods that they wanted. It was very simple. A lot of them had older brothers, older cousins, uncles who were into particularly drug dealing. A lot of them were into gangs, searching for a family that they thought the gang was. You know, it looked like to be something that it wasn't. If I talked to any of them, if you talked to any of them, they would say they were just, you know, why they do it, they were trying to survive. The irony is that they weren't surviving. They were dying, going to prison, and destroying their communities. So I had to plunge in and say, this is what this really is, no matter what it looks like on the outside.
So the difficulties that you had in plunging in?
Difficulties is that I was the only one saying it. Their friends were involved. Many times their families were involved. You know, and here comes this one guy and the folks that work with me saying, it's a trap. It's not as advertised. It does false advertising. This is what's really going to happen. And it continues to be the biggest difficulty is I came to be outnumbered in the voices that were in their life, in their head. The other difficulty is that when you're in that lifestyle, you really don't trust anybody. There aren't any friends. As they say, there's no love in the streets or in the game. The initial hurdle I had was them just believing me and trusting me as an adult who really wanted to help them.
You mentioned it was a trap. What is the it that you talk about?
The streets, the lifestyle, the drug game, as they put it, gang violence, even being in a gang, appears to be something that is not. It's insidious. It's really a death style. It's really an incarceration style. It's not a lifestyle. It's not a game as is advertised. It is life. It's death and incarceration. But you know, when you see somebody riding around in fancy cars and having a lot of money, and you know, for the young men having a lot of girls and all of that sort of thing, it looks on the outside like it's something else. So. That's the trap. The trap can't appear to be a trap. That's the whole thing. It didn't look like a trap, but it certainly was. Now, a lot of these guys when I got into it didn't know it was. False advertisement is a good way for me to put it. It just did not appear to be what it actually turned out to be.
Your other primary activity, as I understand it, is being a member of the San Francisco Police Commission. And as a commissioner, I presume you're not the only black person. What does the police commission do? What influence can you bring to it to address the issues that Alive and Free addresses?
Well, to be honest, there have been times I have been the only black person on the commission and actually the only community person on the commission. I've been on the commission a long time now. I was appointed by Mayor Newsom in 2004, served a two-year term initially, and he reappointed me for a four-year term, then another four-year term right before he left to become lieutenant governor. And when that last term was up, I thought I would sail off into the sunset, but Mayor Lee, our current mayor, just appointed me for another four-year term. And every one of them that says what I bring to the commission is vital, not only because I am African-American, but I'm a member of the community. So my lens is a little bit different. And here's the other thing. There are times I've been the only non-lawyer on the commission. You got a seven-member commission and six lawyers. So I'm... You know, but you've got the community, you got somebody who's not a lawyer, you got somebody who's African-American. It brings a different lens to policy. And since our police chief cannot fire employees, he can only discipline up to 10 days, any serious misconduct comes before the commission. We discipline officers at the commission level, and there's a lens I bring to that that I think is valuable.
Recently, there have been some displays of derogatory written comments, derogatory towards black people, among the police officers.
Yeah.
Is that before the commission?
That matter is before the commission. I believe there have been a total of between 8 and 10 officers whose cases are now before the police commission. They have to go through the legal process. The ultimate decision as to whether they remain with the San Francisco Police Department will rest with us at the commission level.
What are the allegations against these officers?
Generally, they deal with conduct unbecoming of a member of the San Francisco Police Department. I'm sure you're referring to the texts among these officers, the content of which seem to be very racist and homophobic messages. I've read the texts. They're pretty tough. I mean, some of them are actually published, so I'm not saying anything that hasn't actually been out in the press. So, yeah, the conduct unbecoming is probably, you know, one of the charges. There are others, but I don't have them in front of me, all of them in front of me.
What I'd like to talk with you about, Dr. Joseph Marshall, is using your training and your background holding a PhD in psychology. What do you think manifests those kinds of texts and communications among sworn public peace officers now in our society in 2015 in America?
Well, you know, I guess the easy phrase or the words is used, you know, frequently is the word bias. We all bring certain biases to our daily profession, whatever it has to, whatever it is. So I don't think police officers are still citizens, regular human beings. So whether it be teachers or officers or, you know, congressmen, they all bring a certain lens to their work. That isn't always caught when officers go through academy training. People make a big deal out of the fact that it's in San Francisco and it's 2015, but I don't know why. You know, San Francisco is in America. And, you know, there's a lot of things happening in 2015 that can have, you know, aren't any different than 1915. When you find things out like this, when these things surface, what you have to do is deal with it.
That brings us to the attitudes of police towards young black men, with specific examples being the murders of young black men that have gone on for a long time. But most recently, they've been noticed in the newspaper. The cause, the effect, share with us your thoughts.
Many times, I continue to say this, and I say this because I believe it. I don't have a problem with police. I have a problem with misconduct. My issue is not police in and of itself. My issue is misconduct. There are plenty of police officers who don't engage in misconduct. And so I don't want to stereotype them or profile them anymore. I want officers profiling, you know, young black men in the community. So my issue is misconduct. My issue is with misconduct actually on both sides. There are a lot of young men who get murdered by other young black men. So my issue is misconduct. Police have a duty to serve and protect, and they need to carry that duty out in a proper manner. And as far as I'm concerned, men in the community have a duty, whether they're paid or not, to conduct themselves in a manner and make it safe for other young men in the community. So I mean, I think what it comes down to is value that's not placed on black life by either group who engage in misconduct. That's something we have to deal with, and that's what we're in the process of doing. I'm in the process of doing both with the police department and in the community.
Let's talk about the origin of the lack of value placed on black life.
Sure. I think it's no secret. I mean, it starts with, it's old, it goes back to slavery, it goes back to how black people came to this country, and then just continues. When I talk to young people, they talk about it's been set up for us to fail, and I said, absolutely, there's no doubt about it. Slavery was set up for you to fail. There was no value on your life or your freedom. When the Declaration of Independence was put in, all men are created equal. When the Constitution set up the framework for the government, it said, no, but you're only three-fifths of a person. So these things have been, intentional from on high. The Hayes-Tilden Compromise, which removed federal troops from the South back in 1876, was a political move which allowed the South basically to return to, you know, to slavery times under, you know, sharecropping and Jim Crow and Tuskegee experiment. There are tons of things throughout history that have been sanctioned. You know, the war on drugs, COINTELPRO, which, as I said, black life just isn't valuable. There's been a message that's gone down from day one. when it comes to America. Now, the issue is that everybody buys into this. A lot of the dominant society, a lot of white people have bought into that, and a lot of black people bought into that, the value of black life. And if you look historically, if you look at, the empires of the world conquering, it just said there was a value. White people were important and black people weren't. And what they've done to Africa, what's been done to Africa. So this is a historic thing that we have to continue to fight.
In this edition of Radio Curious, we're visiting with Dr. Joseph Marshall, the executive director and co-founder of Alive and Free, a program based in San Francisco, California, working with young black people to keep them away from drugs, keep them alive, and keep them free as not being in jail. You're listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Dr. Marshall, raising young black children, teaching them how to protect themselves and how to advance, considering what we have discussed in this conversation and all the related issues.
Well, for me, it's important to be honest. whether it be my child, my own personal children, or with the young people that I teach, I'm just tell them the history. You know, talk about the what has happened in the past, that the challenges that they face, sort of, being able to guide them through the pitfalls that await them. Have them up for the challenge. Life is a struggle. It's a struggle, period. It's a struggle without the issues of race, without the issues of class. It's just a struggle to just make it in life. What I really want them to do is to be up for the struggle, realize that it's a never-ending struggle, develop plans to be able to move forward, and to stay alive and free and to thrive and to be educated and to thrive. And then to sort of go back and turn around and help the next person. That's just a given. That's not a problem that anyone should seek to, be naive about or avoid. That's just the way it is. And if you look at the black community in general, it's always been what I call going against, whether it's, the legal issues, the legal system, the laws that have been set up for particularly black folks not to thrive and indeed to fail, not to stay alive and free, and taking on those challenges and removing those hurdles. I often call this a marathon relay race for freedom. Marathon is long, and relay means you got to be able to hand the baton off to someone else. And so, I don't mind that. That's the way it is. I've come from a long line of freedom fighters, people who've been in the marathon and have handed it off to me, and I'm happy to do my part.
Joe Marshall, some people characterize the black-white racial issue as a black problem, and others characterize it as a white problem. What's your take on that?
I've never looked at it as a white or black problem. It's a problem. The best way for me to characterize it is the issue of value. It's fairly clear that traditionally black life has been devalued and white life had a greater value. It's a historical thing. So when I talk about it, it's to me, you have to value everybody's life. Dr. King was just great. It's about content of character. It's not about color of skin. It's about valuing individuals as human beings and not letting those things get in the way. That's just not the case in the world. And that can affect your personal value. You begin to feel that you're not valuable, that you're not important, and you succumb to that. My short answer when I talk to people is, do you value people? Do you value human life? No matter what the color, what their ethnicity, any of those things, all these laws that we try to pass to get people to do it, it's about how people feel about, other people. The stereotypes we have can spur us on to devalue others because of the notions that we have in our head about them.
Joe, would you describe your weekly radio show, which is broadcast from San Francisco Sunday nights at 8 o'clock for 2 hours? and the discussion you had about what's currently going on in Baltimore, Maryland?
Well, my radio show is Street Soldiers. It's on Sunday nights here in the Bay Area, and actually can be heard on iHeart anywhere and also online. Yeah, you know, Baltimore, 6 days of almost a rerun for me. Deja vu is, you know, the word the phrase you could use. I mean, I've seen Baltimore before. I grew up in Los Angeles. You know, I saw Los Angeles go up in an insurrection and as a young man in 1965, and saw it again in 1992 with Rodney King. Both of those were precipitated by encounters with the police. You know, this is Freddie Scott in Baltimore was precipitated that insurrection, as I guess you want to call it, because that's the phrase we used back then, which led to rioting, peaceful demonstrations at first, which turned into rioting and looting and so on and so forth. That never helps. Never, ever, 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 ever helps. Essentially, it's, you know, you burn down, destroy your own neighborhoods, hurt the very people that you should be looking out for. You know, they can't go to the places that they've been able to go to every day. They say it's probably, and this is, a feeling of hopelessness and so on and so forth. Some interesting dynamics in Baltimore is that the mayor is black, the chief of police is black, a number of the officers are black, the city council is black. No, I mean, that's unlike Ferguson, it was different from Ferguson. And so much of its issue with police has been focused on, you know, white officers and black men. It turns out that the six who were been charged with a variety of charges, and one including, I believe, attempted murder, one was a woman and three of them were black. So I gave folks a chance to talk about it last night on the show without judgment, and that's the whole thing is, you know, just talking without judgment, have people say what they want to say and just how they felt. Interesting was the young people I have in my, who was part of the team in the studio. I remember they were saying, like, I get it now, Dr. Marshall. You know, I mean, you went through it, but this for me, and she's 21 years old. And she was saying, you know, it was one thing to be, for you to talk about, it's one thing for me to see it. And so I get it now. It's fascinating to hear them talk about it. And it's almost like, hearing the same thing over again. This country isn't for us. And, and I had to, basically have a long talk with everybody, including the audience, about it's not, yes, that's the reality. Now the question is, what do you do about it? What kind of reforms do you want to put in place? And what kind of, it's all about the next day and putting things in place so that you can make changes.
What would those reforms be from your perspective?
Well, I think with the police, there's a number of things. I mean, the president has put out a document on 21st century policing. It's got a lot of things in there. I'm digesting it, obviously, as a community person, but also as a member of the police commission. Our commission is looking at it. I think civilian oversight is essential. I mean, we're lucky here that we have civilian oversight. We actually have two bodies that provide civilian oversight in the city of San Francisco, but a place like Ferguson doesn't have any civilian oversight. Obviously, you have to do better when it comes to selecting and training, police officers. You got to do something about bias. You have to do something about that lens that a lot of officers bring to the job. I think it's going to be a real challenge. I think you can put things into training that certainly can help. I think it's going to be a real challenge to do something about those officers who've been there for a while, because we've got to come up with some way to deal and retrain them. So there's a number of ideas about the body cameras are in the vogue now. In fact, in San Francisco, our mayor just came out last Thursday, and said he was purchasing body cameras, or they were putting in the budget with the Board of Supervisors body cameras for all 1,800 officers. So all that will help, but you have to be vigilant. You have to be vigilant. The other thing you do is you have to really support those officers who are doing well and are not part of the problem.
Well, Dr. Joseph Marshall, I want to thank you very much for being with us on Radio Curious. And before we close, can you tell us about a eureka or an aha moment that shaped your life?
In the age of 19, I read my favorite book, The Autobiography of Malcolm X. That was the book that opened my eyes to the big picture, opened my eyes to certainly my own history and culture, which I knew nothing about, explained to me why the conditions, I grew up in Los Angeles and South Central, why my neighborhood was the way it was, how those conditions were created. So certainly it was that book, reading that book at the age of 19, that focused my life into the way it is right now.
And what would you like to do with the remainder of your one precious life?
Oh, continue to help young people everywhere. People everywhere stay alive and free. Alive and free is, that's my calling. I've been fortunate to be able to go literally all over the world, and even really the State Department has taken me to, Botswana and Nigeria and to Thailand and to Canada to do something about the issue of violence in the world. That's what I want to do with my life, and my motto is something my grandmother told me when I was 6 years old, the more you know, the more you owe. And that means to me, as you go on progress in life, so you must help others to do likewise. So I'm glad she gave me that message.
And finally, Dr. Joe Marshall, is there a book beyond the autobiography of Malcolm X that you can recommend to our listeners?
Well, my own, Street Soldier, One Man's Struggle to Save a Generation, One Life at a Time, by myself and Lonnie Wheeler. Actually, I have people come up and say that book saved my life. So if I can be as self-serving as to recommend Street Soldier, I would do that.
Well, Dr. Joseph Marshall, thank you very much for being with us on Radio Curious.
Thank you very much for having me, Barry.
Dr. Joseph E. Marshall is a co-founder and executive director of Alive and Free, a community violence protection program for at-risk inner-city youth and a surrogate family support system for young Black men and women based in San Francisco, California, to encourage their academic pursuits and obtain financial help for college. In 1994, he received the MacArthur Foundation Genius Award for his skills and accomplishments. The website for Alive and Free is stayaliveandfree.org. The website for Street Soldiers Radio is streetsoldiersradio.org. The books that Dr. Joseph Marshall recommends are The Autobiography of Malcolm X and Street Soldier, One Man's Struggle to Save a Generation, One Life at a Time, by Dr. Joseph Marshall and Lonnie Wheeler. This program was recorded on May 4th, 2015. There are over 500 editions of Radio Curious on our website, radiocurious.org. They're free to listen, download, and share as you wish. The email address is curious@radiocurious.org, and the phone is 707-462-6541. Christina Onnestad is the assistant producer, and I'm host and producer Barry Vogel. Thank you for listening.